welcome to the newest episode of the SmackDown Summary. This is number 12. Last week you were treated to the Rawdown Smackery, which is a great name for a kinky porno. But I'm back this week. I'm Kenny McIntosh, and I'm joined, as always, by Sondra, my American friend who hates The Undertaker, loves Kevin Owens, and will basically female masturbate to NXT. Sondra, hello.
I don't see anything wrong with any of those things. And NXT was so good last night. Like, I know that's not what we're here to talk about, and I won't go into it, but it was really, really good. And there was this great brawl with Shinsuke Nakamura and Samoa Joe, and yeah,
it was. If only we had somewhere that you could talk about NXT on a regular basis.
There were somewhere like that. That sounds anyway. Like it might be an idea for the future.
Potentially next week. So we've got two shows to talk about today. We're going to talk about SmackDown for the SmackDown summary, but we're also going to talk about No Mercy as well, because No Mercy was a thing that happened in the 90s, but has been brought back and isn't as good as it was. But it was a thing.
It was a thing. It happened.
And it was at the Golden One Center, which is the most awful name for a venue. It's not as bad as the Smoothie King's Arena in New Orleans, which always kill my soul.
Every arena you say is the worst name. The Rogers Center is the worst name.
That's because it used to be the Sky Dome.
I know, and I'm not saying I disagree with you. It's just there's some shit named arenas.
It's like, I know if I Google this, and somebody's probably going to tweet me and like kill my soul. I love the Georgia Dome. You know, oh, so good. I bet you they've renamed that to something shit. But I'm not going to look.
I have no idea. I won't be able to ruin your fun.
Okay,
here.
So Sacramento, California was the city for No Mercy, and because of the presidential debate that was happening on Sunday night, they decided to put a tweet out that day saying that they were going to put the WWE Championship match on first, AJ Styles, John Cena, Dean Ambrose, in a triple threat match. This opened the show. It went about 20 minutes or so. Just my quick thoughts on it, because I know we need to get through two shows here. I liked the match. I enjoyed a lot of the stuff, but I don't understand the end.
I am with you. I thought the match was excellent. Excellent. Up until that weird double submission bullshit thing that didn't make any sense.
Here's my problem with it. My problem is, if the referee is ringing the bell, he should be ringing
the bell. The referee didn't. It was the timekeeper.
But did the referee not look over to ring the bell?
No. I think that was part of it, was that the referee didn't. The timekeeper jumped the gun or something. And I don't know if that was supposed to happen or... The referee looked over and was like, no, why are you ringing the bell?
Okay, well, that actually makes more sense, to be fair. That makes more sense. Because my whole thing was like, well, if the referee's going to have a winner, like, he should have a winner. And then AJ Styles is tapped, so why is he back in the match? Mm-hmm. Like, there was... I think there was so many questions that I didn't quite understand what was going on. And I know that people in the arena were kind of had an issue with it as well. They didn't really know what was going on. We had one of our listeners, Andrew, I don't know how to pronounce this. How do you pronounce this surname? A-D-A-M-E.
Adame.
He was there, and he said that all three guys, Cena, AJ, and Ambrose, got mixed reactions. But from what I heard from a few people in the arena, they didn't understand the finish.
Yeah, I don't think they did. And, I mean, it was hard enough to understand it at home when commentary was trying to explain it, which I don't think they did a great job of. But, I mean, also I was talking to one of my friends on Facebook, and I was talking to people on Twitter as this was going on. And so then it was like, is AJ Styles eliminated? Is that why they rung the bell? That doesn't actually make any sense. This isn't an elimination match. Like, my question is, why would John Cena try to lock on a submission in the first place when Dean Ambrose already has a submission on? Why wouldn't he break it up? John Cena should probably know the rules of pro wrestling by now.
You would think.
Like, it just... none of it made sense, and it was just a shame, because I thought the match was so good up to that point. I thought they did the triple threat match really, really well, and I thought all three guys were looking really good. Like, all my qualms about Dean Ambrose and everything, he's never going to be my favorite wrestler with that offense, but oh boy, does AJ Styles know how to pull something out of Dean Ambrose and actually make him look like a good wrestler. So
it was a very good match, which it was one of those ones that I'm not saying that they couldn't have done a finish like this. I just don't think the execution was there.
No, I don't think the execution was there, and I don't think this was a circumstance that needed it.
Like, because, you know, as much as you did not enjoy this, like, I enjoyed the idea of what they tried to do with Brock Lesnar and The Undertaker at SummerSlam last year. Mm-hmm. I just think the main issue with it was that it wasn't executed as well as it could have been.
Yeah.
That's the issue, because like for those things to work, and they are clever in certain ways, but for those things to work, you're relying on the audience getting it. Mm-hmm. And if the audience don't get it, I don't think it works.
I don't think confusion, unless you're meant to go off the show with confusion and like a what happened and, you know, stay tuned for an explanation kind of a thing. But that this wasn't that, right? Like, this was not a situation where it was like, oh, I need to tune in on Raw to see who actually won the match or to see what happened, because they restarted the match and then kind of had a flat ending to it. Not that the stuff after the spot was bad, but I think everyone was just so confused that it was really hard to be invested, because we were all just kind of asking what was going on, which isn't good, because if you're confused, then you're not going to be reacting to what you're seeing. You're just going to be like, why? What's happening? You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I concur.
Then AJ Styles is still our champion, and I'm really happy about that.
That is the news that we all wanted. We wanted AJ Styles to remain the WWE champion, and he did. And it was a great match. So, you know, I like to look at that positive rather than the kind of confusing finish negative. Mm-hmm. Nikki Bella Carmella was up next. Andrew, our correspondent in the arena, said that parts of the crowd weren't fans of Nikki Bella, which I thought was quite interesting, because she seems on TV to get pretty decent reactions for the most part. So. Yeah. Interesting to see, is that maybe the beginning of people, because she's not really a great babyface, really.
I think she's been doing okay at it, actually, but
she's been doing okay, but like the problem you have in wrestling is that when Carmella, I don't think Carmella's a particularly great wrestler, but I think she's doing very well at playing the heel.
Yeah.
And I think the problem, if you look back in the history of wrestling, is that when a heel plays the role very well and a babyface plays the role adequately, eventually the heel begins to get cheered.
That is true.
So, like, I feel like maybe Nikki needs to step up a wee bit in that regard. But that's a minor criticism. I wasn't blown away by this match. It was what it was. It was fine. What did you think of it?
It was fine. It was, I mean, it wasn't as bad as I think it could have been. Because I think Nikki Bella, I think, is a good wrestler. I don't think she's a great wrestler. And I think she does a lot better in situations where she's in there with other good wrestlers, right? And she's not the type of wrestler who's great at leading matches with people less experienced. And Carmella is definitely in that less experienced category. But I mean, I don't think that this was particularly bad or anything. It was a fine wrestling match. I did like Nikki selling her neck. I liked that story aspect of it. And I liked that Carmella's being so vicious. So, I mean, there were good things about it. And I think that's where, I think Nikki has like pretty decent babyface thing going, because I think she's playing the kind of the babyface in peril pretty well, given that she has her legitimate injury. And
I think she does it well during the matches.
Yeah. But I mean, promo skills have never been her strongest point. So.
I did like that they had Carmella look strong in defeat. That was good.
Yeah.
You know, so that was okay. I think you hit the nail on the head more than I could, which is that Nikki Bella, I was watching Raw this week, and I was watching Charlotte and Sasha, you know, in the ring, promoing with Rusev and all this sort of stuff, and listening to Sasha and Charlotte talk about being in Hell in a Cell and all this sort of stuff, and whether you agree with that decision or not, put it this way, I was thinking to myself, I couldn't see Nikki Bella being able to be in that situation. I don't think she's on a level with those two that could do that. Like, I don't think you would put Nikki Bella in a Hell in a Cell. I don't think she's at that point. Maybe she will. I mean, I think she's improved, but it will be intriguing to see where she goes. I think ultimately she goes back heel and becomes, you know, Nikki Bella the heel. That's what I see her. But
I think she's best as a heel, but I think in her situation right now, I think babyface is the right choice.
This is true. We get a promo backstage with The Miz and Maurice talking about Dolph Ziggler and saying that after he wins, he wants to renegotiate his contract, because when he gets rid of Dolph, they'll have extra money to work with, which that was pretty good. Very, very smarmy.
I am a little tired of all the contract negotiation talk. Like, I don't care.
It's The Miz, though.
I know it's The Miz, and I love The Miz, and I love The Miz and Daniel Bryan, and I love all of that, but I just, what's the payoff to a behind-the-scenes contract negotiation, really?
Yes, exactly. So then we had Rhino and Heath Slater, the tag team champions, battling the Usos for the SmackDown tag team titles. I thought this was a slam dunk that it was going to be the Usos getting the titles, and they didn't. I think for me, I was I kind of was a bit underwhelmed in the sense that I thought the Usos were kind of taken care of a bit too easily for where they are as a tag team, just having turned heel. I would have liked to have seen a little bit more from them, or I would like to have seen it take a little bit more to beat them than it did, because I think Rhino and Heath Slater, as good as they are clearly not a team that you are going to be pushing as a top tag team in a year's time. So that was just... But, you know, apart from that, it was fun. The crowd like Rhino Heath Slater, so it was fine.
Yeah, it surprised me, definitely, because I kind of figured that the, you know, the easy story to tell would be that the Usos beat Beauty and the Man Beast and then go on to feud with American Alpha. And that seemed to be what they were building to. So I'm not quite sure what the plan is here, but I'm also pretty excited to still see Rhino and Heath Slater on top, just because I like them so much. And I feel like the crowd is still really into them, so maybe they're just going to capitalize on their popularity for a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I wasn't upset with it, for sure, because, I mean, I love baby Rhino and Heath Slater. Like, they're awesome. And Rhino, with his Fallout videos, talking about how he wants to go eat Cheese Whiz and have a Cheese Whiz party and all of that. Like, how can I hate that, right? I think it's great. I'm kind of curious to see where the tag team division goes from this point. And yeah, I mean, I guess that's about it. The match was fine. It was good. I enjoyed it, but not a whole lot to say other than that.
Indeed. Then we got Jack Swagger and Baron Corbin. Oh my God. Now, first of all, Baron Corbin, either wear a t-shirt or wear your jacket. Wear one of the two. Don't wear both. It doesn't work.
Yeah, it's a bit weird.
Just a thought. Baron Corbin got his win back. He beat Jack Swagger in about 7 minutes. I could not care any less about this. But Andrew in the arena again said the same thing, that the crowd weren't really into it either. Were you into it, Sandra?
I was probably more into it than most people because I like Jack Swagger. But, I mean, truth be told, it was just a match, right?
Theme of the night for some aspects. Okay, anything else to add about Baron Corbin and Swagger, or can we move on?
I think we can move on. I mean, as much as I would love to make a passionate plea for why this was great and why I care, and, you know, I mean, there were good things in the match, but it was a match.
I was going to say, are you ready to lose all of your integrity as a person who podcasts?
Ask some people, I've already done that.
That's true. How dare you not like the man that only walks down there once a year? The Miz versus Dolph Ziggler for the Intercontinental Championship and Dolph Ziggler's career. This match went about 20 minutes and it did what I did never think they could do. It made me pop for Dolph Ziggler finally winning the championship. They brought in a lot of elements to it. They brought in the stuff that Maurice sprayed in Ziggler's eyes before. They brought the Spirit Squad out. They did the bottom rope thing. They had all these different spots. But in the end, Ziggler would catch Miz with a super kick and pin him clean to become Intercontinental Champion. This was, by a country mile, the best thing on this show. It was excellent. I loved it.
God bless the Miz and Dolph Ziggler. Like, a year ago. Can you imagine?
6 months ago.
6 months ago. Can you imagine being this excited about The Miz and Dolph Ziggler?
3 months ago.
Yeah. Like a month ago. Like any amount of time ago. Can you imagine being this excited about The Miz and Dolph Ziggler? But this was excellent. It was pitch perfect and it was the perfect payoff to everything they've been doing. I genuinely didn't know who was going to win here. And I mean, all of Dolph Ziggler's teasing before the show that, you know, he was going to be taking bookings and all that stuff, it kind of seemed over the top. So I was like, okay, maybe this is kind of a red herring and, you know, you're throwing all this stuff out there to make us think that he's going to lose and he's actually going to win. And did that make it better? Yep, it absolutely did. So it worked. So props to you, WWE and Dolph Ziggler and The Miz, for making this such a great story and making me so invested in it. Because as much as I wanted The Miz to stay Intercontinental Champion because I love The Miz, oh boy, in this match, did they get me to the point where, yeah, I also popped for a Dolph Ziggler super kick win, right? Without a boot on, because The Miz had pulled off his boot.
SmackDown is a magical place.
It's so good. And, you know, all of the crazy shenanigans, it's the kind of stuff that could go terribly wrong and just feel like overkill, right? Like, because you have the mist or the, you know, perfume or whatever, and you have the Spirit Squad, and you have everybody running out, and you have all this stuff going on. And I feel like everybody played their role so well in this match that it worked perfectly. Went off without a hitch.
This is how WWE used to be really good at doing a WWE-style big-time match, and they don't do it as well as they should, and this was an example of how well they can do it when they want to.
I loved it. I loved everything
about it.
Absolutely
excellent.
All the heels get kicked out, like all the ringside people, the Spirit Squad, and Maurice getting kicked out. It had everything we love, Kenny.
It did. This was... If you've not watched this show and you only have like 20 minutes, this is the only thing you should watch.
Yeah.
Like, this was excellent.
I mean, the opener was good, but watch this. Watch this, which should have been the main event. Like, I know you don't like to complain about card placement, but
Oh, no. I fell asleep on a live stream, Sondra. nod off numerous times on a live stream.
That
Trust
is
me.
Really funny, actually.
Because I thought I had, so I went and checked, and I was like, yep, I totally fell asleep. Oh, what an idiot. But Randy Orton was backstage looking at himself in the mirror. His face started going a bit Viggo Ghostbuster 2-ish. So that was fun. So they announced, obviously, that Becky Lynch has a... So from what I've heard from Dave Meltzer and other people reporting on it is that there's a medical thing going on with her, but it's not an injury.
She has a medical condition unrelated to in-ring competition.
There you go. She is actually in hospital right now. But she is going to be back, and randomly she's going to defend the title against Alexa Bliss in Glasgow on the November. Is it the November 9th SmackDown or November 8th?
8th,
yeah. So they decided to give Alexa Bliss an opponent anyway, and this was Naomi. Now, Sondra, I apologize in advance, but this was shite.
No, you don't need to apologize because
this
was terrible.
This was so fucking bad. This match put women's wrestling back like a year. It was awful. They should both be ashamed of themselves, Naomi more so, because she's supposed to be more experienced. Like,
do you
Alexa
see what
Bliss...
I'm saying about Naomi now?
Yes, I do. But Alexa Bliss deserves blame here too.
Yeah,
like,
she does.
She was not very
good here either.
The problem you have is that Alexa Bliss is the sort... She shouldn't have been put in a match here. Don't put her in a match. Like, have her do a promo, have her do anything else. Alexa Bliss is at a point where she needs to feel like a big star. And this stuff makes her feel minor league, and you don't want her feeling minor league. Naomi, like,
and
I don't...
She especially feels minor league if Naomi fucking beats her.
Yes, this is a big problem. Naomi beats her in like 5 minutes. It was so bad.
In
the
a
match
terrible match.
Yeah, it was awful. It was, like, I had my head in my hands at one point, I'm sure. It was bad. It was just... I mean, like, here's the biggest insult I can give it, which is true, is, like, see, if I was in the building, this was the piss break.
Yeah.
Like, that's what this was. And we can say that because there is good wrestling going on. I mean, so, like, you can kind of say that. But, yeah, this was awful.
Absolutely awful. I probably would have already taken a piss break at Baron Corbin versus Jack Swagger, but...
Very true. So yeah, hopefully they can rebuild that.
No, it just upsets me because I was so excited for Becky Lynch versus Alexa Bliss, and I still am. I am still excited for that match, and I do think that Alexa Bliss is better than this, but I think Alexa Bliss is also, like, as much as I think she is really good, and I think she can have really good matches, but I think it's similar to the Nikki Bella situation where she's not going to be able to have really good matches with people who are not good wrestlers, right? And Naomi is not a good wrestler. So that's the problem. And it upsets me that they make Alexa Bliss like what is their plan? Like, did they have on the whiteboard, you know, Becky Lynch was supposed to win, so Alexa Bliss was supposed to lose, so she still has to lose this? Because that makes sense. To build your number one contender? Like, I know that she's going to be having a match with Naomi next week on SmackDown. Oh boy, look for that rematch. Everybody's excited. Nobody wants to see this match again.
It was awful. Let's not talk about it anymore, because it's just taking away time from good things.
That's true.
Main event of the show, Randy Orton, Bray Wyatt. This felt like it went on forever. It just... Like, I was... This is when I really was falling asleep.
I can't blame you. It wasn't great. I mean, there were good things in it. Again, like, it was dull.
It was just dull. Like, Bray Wyatt is just on life support. And then, like, Randy Orton had... Like, Randy Orton has been so good since he came back. Like, I loved the thing with Jericho he did. And then the stuff with Lesnar. Like, it was so good. And I actually like that he's taking chances on SmackDown creatively and not just being the same old Randy Orton, but...
Yeah.
This match, man, my God. It was so... And then, like, at the end, it's like, here's Luke Harper. And I was like, okay, fine. Like, okay.
I mean, I'm excited to see Luke Harper back. And especially after SmackDown and Talking Smack, I admit I'm kind of into it again.
Now, I've not seen Talking Smack yet, so you can fill me in this in a little bit on what happens there. But for the purposes of just Sunday at this point, I was like, oh, you know.
Yeah,
like,
for the purposes of Sunday, I will say, when Luke Harper showed up and Bray Wyatt hit Sister Abigail in one, I was actually a little disappointed because that meant it would continue. And that's me getting about a Bray Wyatt win. That is what Bray Wyatt has done to me. Like, that is how bad all of his character trajectory has been. It's been awful.
Yeah, it has been. So that was No Mercy, which I actually wouldn't recommend going back and watching it. I'd recommend the Miz and Ziggler match, and if you have time, watch the opener, but I would just skip the rest.
I was disappointed in the show overall, because I think SmackDown has been really good, and I think SmackDown was, again, very good this week. But No Mercy just... I think, honestly, taking Becky Lynch and Alexa Bliss off it, obviously they didn't have a choice, but that kind of killed a lot of the buzz for me. And then replacing it with Alexa Bliss and Naomi really killed the buzz for me. And I think the placement of the matches on the card also hurt the show. Because to open with the title match, I understand why they did it. I don't fully understand, because ratings shouldn't matter so much when it's a show on the network. It's not on television. But as Alan Proven pointed out to me, they're probably concerned about social media ratings and that kind of thing. But, like, if The Miz and Ziggler had closed this show, we probably would have come out of it going, oh, okay, well, at least, you know, like, it had a great main event.
That's true. That's true. I will give you that. But let's move on to SmackDown on the USA Network this past Tuesday, live from San Jose, California, home of WrestleMania Play, home of Dave Meltzer, home of the Tram, and home of the SAP Center, the SAP Center. Another shit name for an arena.
Mm-hmm. SAP Center. Doesn't that just sound where people go there to cry? Like, oh, you poor SAP. Have an arena.
Yeah, it does. So we open up with Dolph Ziggler, the new Intercontinental Champion. He comes out, he's all happy, he's won the championship, you know, he's all just awash with emotion. And then The Miz comes out with Maryse,
dressed all in black,
to mourn the Intercontinental Championship.
They're in mourning.
Oh, this was so good.
I love them so much.
The Miz said that Dolph Ziggler's win was a funeral for the Intercontinental Championship.
Because it has lost its prestige and died around Dolph Ziggler's waist.
Oh, this is far better than his world title run. I don't care that he main evented at WrestleMania. This is better stuff. Miz was telling Ziggler, you know, if you think it's over, you're kidding yourself. This was act two of the story, where the hero gets the gold and the girl at the end of the story, and he's already got the girl, so he's just waiting on the gold.
He called Dolph Ziggler's title When the Empire Strikes Back. Which I know you don't understand as a reference completely, but most of the world does.
Most of the world knows what it means. I laugh along awkwardly. So footage was shown on the big screen, The Miz kind of crying after he lost, Ziggler was mocking him, Miz silenced him and said if he'd, and basically at the end of it, said he wasn't done with them, and then the Spirit Squad come out, because apparently they're still around, and we got Dolph Ziggler against Mikey and Kenny, and Dolph Ziggler disposed of them relatively quickly, and then The Miz ran in, put a bit of a beating on old Ziggs, the Spirit Squad joined in, and... in the end, first of all, while we're talking about it, what do you think of the Spirit Squad and their involvement here?
I love the Spirit Squad so completely. And I love that they're involved here. I think it's hilarious. I really like it. I like bringing up something from Dolph Ziggler's past. I like that they're making the Spirit Squad Dolph Ziggler canon now. Because everybody talks about it, right? And I mean, I wasn't watching wrestling back then. There's just something about a group of male cheerleaders that absolutely belongs on my wrestling television.
This is true. And I thought Dolph Ziggler... Here's the thing. I think the money is in Dolph Ziggler having a short reign and Miz getting it back. That's for me, that's where it goes. Because The Miz is far more, there's so much more you can do with him. And
yeah,
I thought
I
this was
agree with
great.
You. And another thing I like about the Spirit Squad's involvement here and this being a handicap match, it means Dolph Ziggler got to look valiant in a handicap match victory, right? And it meant that we didn't just get Dolph Ziggler versus The Miz to set up Dolph Ziggler versus The Miz again, where The Miz pinned Intercontinental Champion Dolph Ziggler or whatever. Because in days of SmackDown old, that's exactly what would have happened. We would have just had the rematch, and then we would have had the rematch for the title again. And then they probably would have fought 12 more times, especially in Dolph Ziggler's history, right? Like, Dolph Ziggler tends to wrestle the same person over and over and over. So I think using the Spirit Squad as the buffer here, because they've been involved in the story especially, I think it's smart, and I think it's fun. And it was great television and really, really enjoyable.
Indeed it was. So we got told about, obviously, again, that Becky Lynch is going to defend the championship on the 8th of November in Glasgow. But up next was very interesting. We get a backstage promo with Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon where they talk about the upcoming 30th anniversary of the Survivor Series, which... Here's the thing, ladies and gentlemen. WWE do not understand the word anniversary.
No, they don't. This is the 30th Survivor Series, correct?
Next year's the... Yeah.
Not next the 30th year... anniversary.
No, next year is the 30th Royal Rumble, not the 30th anniversary.
No.
But, you know, I mean, I do understand to kind of defend them a little bit. It does sound better to say 30th anniversary because the word anniversary sounds good, but just do it in the right... But then, yeah, I don't know. I get why they do it, but I just would prefer if they...
I suppose next year they could promote the 30th anniversary of Survivor Series again and actually be correct.
They could. So, yeah, basically...
Why don't they just say annual?
They used to say that. They used to say the,
like,
fifth annual Survivor
the
Series.
Annual, or instead of saying the anniversary of Survivor Series, it's the 30th annual. It still has the A. It still rolls off the tongue.
Yeah, I agree with you. Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon, they were backstage. They spoke about the upcoming 30th anniversary of Survivor Series, which is not an anniversary. And they talked about SmackDown being the land of opportunity. So they've made a challenge to Raw for three matches. One match with Raw's best five male wrestlers against SmackDown's best five male wrestlers, one for the female wrestlers, and one for the best tag teams. And the crowd seemed receptive. Now, I am a guy who grew up on old school Survivor Series, which you did not grow up on.
No.
And you might not have the nostalgia for. But I'm curious, with now a brand split and two separate shows, how did you feel when this challenge was put out to Raw? What was your reaction to this?
I have never before looked forward to a Survivor Series for the Survivor Series matches because there hasn't really been that much to latch onto. Even when it was, I think when I first started watching, there was probably a Raw versus SmackDown match of some sort. I can't remember, but it was never anything that felt big. I am so excited for this Survivor Series to see these matches. And I know the brand split hasn't happened. Like, it didn't happen that long ago. It just happened in July. So it might seem a bit soon to have, like, Raw versus SmackDown. But already, I am so stoked to see, you know, Charlotte and Sasha and Bayley in the same ring as, like, Becky and Nikki and Carmella and others, right?
Mm-hmm.
The idea of that is so cool to me. So I actually squealed with excitement and was like, I am so excited to see this. I think the 20-man tag or whatever is going to be just huge with the tag teams, and they're gonna have to use basically every single tag team. It makes me wonder on the SmackDown roster which five women they're gonna pick, because there are six of them.
Well, I guess the five and not Eva Marie.
No. Oh, well, yeah, because Becky's out. That's right. But she'll be back by then.
She'll be back, yeah. So fucking take Naomi out of it.
Yeah, take Naomi out of it. Thank you. That's what I was hoping you'd say.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this, because the thing about Survivor Series, the thing that made Survivor Series great and the thing that made it such a big show was that what you would get is that you would get matches with people who don't week to week get to face off against each other. That was the purpose. That was the premise. That's what we're going to get again. And the Goldberg-Lesnar thing, which, you know, they are doing before Andy wonders, well, Goldberg's on next week. What are they going to do? They're having a match in Survivor Series.
Yep, deal that's what's it. Happening. In fact, well, Daniel Bryan and Renee Young basically all but said that on Talking Smack. They sort of like of accidentally spoiled it.
But even that, like, that's a big match. Do it on Survivor Series, because then all of a sudden that show now becomes this destination pay-per-view for interpromotional wars, the return of a legend, you know, a Lesnar match, you know, all these big things that you're going
to
get.
The place to see stuff you can't normally see.
Exactly, in so many different ways. So I think this is great, and I love that SmackDown were the ones to make the challenge.
I love it too. I think it's great.
So, because I think they needed to. But, of course, with every bit of happiness, they throw you a bit of shame. So Carmella was dealt with Naomi as an opponent for a match. It was fine, you know. It didn't really do anything. Nikki obviously came out, distracted Carmella enough for Naomi to win the match. And Nikki tried to get some revenge on Carmella, but she bailed. And that was pretty much it. Any thoughts on this?
Well, didn't Carmella attack Nikki beforehand again, backstage?
Yes, she did. Sorry, I should have added that. She did. She attacked her backstage before the match. So Nikki's revenge.
That's why Nikki came out. She wasn't just being like a dickhead babyface. She was seeking retribution for having just been attacked.
True.
Other than that, I don't have anything to say about the match because it was bad and meh.
So yeah, that was pretty much that. Not really much to talk about there. We do get up next Chad Gable against Jimmy Uso. They have a match. I love American Alpha and the Usos, so I was quite happy to just see these guys go at it. There wasn't really much to it or anything that exciting happening, but it was fine for what it was. And in the end, Jey Uso helped his brother and Jimmy Uso stole a victory from Chad Gable. This was enjoyable.
A clever double team spot there with, like, instead of putting Jimmy's feet up on the rope to get leverage, Jey actually, like, pushed his body with his feet. So I thought that was clever.
Yeah, it was pretty clever.
The Usos are doing clever things, and I'm liking it. It's good.
I like the Usos. Oh, God. Backstage, the Hype Bros.
Mm.
They're talking.
Unfortunately.
The Ascension came in. They all kind of erotically stared at each other.
That happened. So, Mojo Rawley is so irritating. And Zack Ryder, bless Zack Ryder. I actually like Zack Ryder, and I feel bad for him for being saddled with Mojo.
Mojo Rawley is just so, so, so bad.
Yes.
AJ Styles made his way out to the ring, bragged about beating John Cena and Dean Ambrose at No Mercy. You know, he was basically just being his absolute smarmy self until Dean Ambrose came out and, you know, told him you're not done yet. Said that, you know, basically was going on about it. And then Styles was saying that he, sorry, my notes have just got lost here. So I'm all of a sudden trying to remember the verbiage again. Styles was saying that, you know, two guys can't tap at one guy in a triple threat match. That's not the rules. So stop whining about it. And
he still found a way to win.
They'll find a way to win. And his next opponent came out. And his next opponent, AJ Styles' next opponent,
hand selected by AJ Styles, it seems.
Hand selected was James Ellsworth to the queue of glory from David J. McCutcheon. James Ellsworth returns to SmackDown. The last time he was on SmackDown, he was the tag team partner of AJ Styles, but now he gets a title shot. Well, not a title shot, he gets a match. Sorry,
he doesn't get a title shot until next week.
Yes, he's coming back. So it ended up that Daniel Bryan would come out and says that, you know, he's a huge James Ellsworth fan. And he made Dean Ambrose the referee between Ellsworth and AJ, which was fun. I enjoyed that. And AJ Styles and James Ellsworth had a match in which Dean Ambrose attempted to be the worst referee of all time.
Oh, he was terrible.
But it was actually kind of fun
in
how he did it. Like, I don't want to say this lightly, but I think I'm enjoying Dean Ambrose again.
Yeah.
I don't want to say it in case it goes away, but like, I thought he was quite good here. So
he was pretty entertaining. I mean, this was, if we have to have wacky Dean Ambrose, this was a proper use of wacky Dean Ambrose, right? Like, instead of being backstage and losing his title belt and wearing floppy hats and pouring sugar into coffee, this actually put some of the wacky antics to use, because he AJ had James Ellsworth in the calf crusher at one point, and then Dean Ambrose answered the phone and was having a phone call. So he couldn't hear James Ellsworth tapping so loudly. Like, James Ellsworth was just slapping that mat as hard as he could to make as much noise as possible. And Dean Ambrose was like, nope, don't hear a thing. Don't know what's going on. Not paying attention to this match. I don't remember why he wasn't counting the pin after the Styles clash, but something distracted him terribly or whatever. And he wouldn't count the pinfall after AJ hit a Styles clash on James Ellsworth, which, by the way, did you see James Ellsworth tuck his head?
That was not good.
That, like, was scary.
To a point where I had a text message from my friend Andrew today saying, was that meant to happen? I think this was like the moment of realization that James Ellsworth is not a WWE wrestler. Like, he is an indie guy who's kind of... But he, you know, in the end... Ambrose would hit the Dirty Deeds. Well, he actually had two, but he hit a second Dirty Deeds, pulled Ellsworth over and made the count. And
super fast count, by the way. 1, 2, 3.
I shit you not, James Ellsworth defeated AJ Styles.
James Ellsworth defeated the WWE World Heavyweight Champion.
And it was kind of great.
It was
Ambrose held up Ellsworth's hat. Because the thing about it is, you can do this because it's so obvious of the story you're telling, and it's not, you know, he didn't really beat him, so it's fine. But
oh yeah, it's not like they're actually saying, like, oh yeah, James Ellsworth could pin AJ Styles. The whole story is that obviously James Ellsworth could not pin AJ Styles.
Yeah,
but
and like I'm
going to
make
did everything, and with Dean Ambrose in the power of decision making, obviously he's going to screw AJ Styles.
Of course. Now, I have an analogy that I want to give you guys. Now, if you watch the TV show Friends, this is going to make sense. I've figured out what Raw and SmackDown are. Raw is the big house that Monica got from her aunt, which was like the Victorian townhouse.
Oh, yeah.
SmackDown is Phoebe's house that she made with the aroma room.
Yeah.
That is what SmackDown is. Like, it's the thing that shouldn't be good, but it's kind of better than the big one.
Yeah.
Like, so, SmackDown is the aroma room. That is now how I refer to it.
I like it.
So, yeah, basically, James Ellsworth has pinned the WWE champion.
Did you see any of the clips of Talking Smack at all?
I saw one clip where Daniel Bryan gives him the title shot, and he just goes, wow, like, wow.
Yeah, he's flabbergasted. He's so perfect. It's just so
and
James Ellsworth.
And he
looks
so terrible. He looks so terrible in a shirt. Like, he looks... he's so bad at being a human, like, in all ways. Like, nothing James Ellsworth does is good. It's all just James Ellsworth. Like,
I think that's the beauty of James Ellsworth right there.
Yeah,
I think that's why he's so effective. He's so bizarre looking. He's just, he really doesn't look like he belongs of this earth, but we're so glad to have him here.
Yeah, like I say, he looks like his face was smashed and people put the pieces back together,
yeah.
But a couple of pieces are in the wrong way.
Or like a couple pieces are still on the floor, but we couldn't figure out where they went.
Yeah. Now, here is what I don't understand. Let's pretend for a second that WWE is a real place. Randy Orton's talking to Kane about Bray Wyatt. This is a conversation that takes place. These are former WrestleMania opponents,
yep.
Ladies and gentlemen. Randy Orton's telling Kane he was tired of living in Bray Wyatt's world and about Bray living in his, and he feels nothing but pain and chaos and torment, and asking Kane if Kane was in or out, and Kane said he was in, but that Orton had issues. Kane was telling Randy Orton that he had issues.
Well, Kane went through anger management. Kane's very self-aware.
Fuck off. Kane's very self... Don't give us that line on the SmackDown summary, Sondra. Kane is very self-aware, for fuck's sake.
I've always had this issue with the fact that Randy Orton never showed up in anger management, when he is the one with anger management issues.
Kane is a man last year who would play two characters on the same show.
And he was very aware of each personality at the time.
But he treated them like separate people!
They were separate people, Kenny. They were separate people.
Fuck you. Oh. Right, so...
I think I enjoyed the Kane dual personality storyline more than anyone in existence. Like,
of course
It's such a Sondra thing. I loved it. I thought it was great. I think we actually recorded an ITR that never got posted where I defended it.
That will never be posted. That will never be found.
Well, I don't have it, so.
Yeah, I'm guessing that's a Robert one.
Yeah.
I did love when he found Seth's severed head. I'll give him that.
That was great.
And he was talking
it's your
to,
severed
like,
head.
Amber from HR or something when she... Anyway.
Yeah.
So many things. But anyway, AJ Styles walks up to Shane and Daniel Bryan, furious about his loss to James Ellsworth. And Shane told him he only had himself to blame for wanting the match, and it would be recorded in history that James Ellsworth beat him. And AJ just kind of walked off muttering to himself. Then we got Randy Orton and Kane against Bray Wyatt and Luke Harper. I mean, this is still going on. In the end, you know, the classic Wyatt sounder hit, lights came on, and Luke Harper was standing in the apron where Kane should have been, and Orton got Sister Abigail, and Bray Wyatt and Luke Harper won. They defeated Randy Orton and Kane, and there's a big mystery. Where is Kane? What's happened to Kane?
I was talking to people on Twitter about this, and, you know, A, Kane is probably locked in a storage locker as retribution. You know, because everybody gets locked in cupboards and things in this feud. And one girl, I think, is... now I can't remember who said it. I think it was Lacey, maybe? I can't remember. But she said, I feel like Kane has been teleported away by the Wyatts so many times that they probably just have a room made up for him. And I really just like that idea. I think it's funny. I will admit, teleporting Kane away kind of got me back into this.
Oh, for fuck's sake, Sandra.
I can't help it. I don't know how to quit them.
Teleporting Kane.
I love teleporting. I love teleporting in wrestling. Like, I have a problem. I admit it.
Okay, so basically, we go off the air on SmackDown with Orton shocked. The Wyatts, I was going to use the word celebrating, but I used that in its loosest term. And Kane's missing. So Kane is now missing,
Kane
ladies
is
and
missing.
Gentlemen.
Kane's been teleported away and kidnapped again.
I mean, I don't know what to say. I don't know how to respond.
Part of what makes me not able to quit them is that they do these little things that are intriguing to me, right? And then they do little things that make sense. And I'm so frustrated at them for doing these little things that make sense. I'm like, the Wyatt family is like my Brokeback Mountain thing. I wish I knew how to quit you. Because on Talking Smack, Bray Wyatt and Luke Harper interrupt at the very end. And Bray Wyatt does this awesome thing where he talks about how he was lost without his brother, but now his brother's back, and now, you know, things are going to change or whatever. And it almost kind of makes sense because he's been so shit without Luke Harper, right? Like, he's lost constantly since Luke Harper's been injured. Luke Harper's been gone for a long time, so Wyatt's been kind of shit for a long time. But, oh, you just had to go and explain that it was because your brother was gone. Great. Now I have a reason to believe things might change. They probably won't, but now I'm all invested and I'm kind of mad about it.
There you go. So I thought SmackDown All In was a thumbs up show. The thing, I think it was very much in danger of becoming a thumbs in the middle show for me. But the things that won me over were obviously all the Dolph Ziggler, Miz stuff, the AJ Styles, Dean Ambrose, Ellsworth stuff, and part of the Kane Norton thing is like morbidly fascinating to me, which I hate myself for. But I'll be honest, I thought the women's stuff was really poor on this show.
It wasn't very good.
I
like that they're continuing the Nikki Bella Carmella story.
I wish they would just do something more interesting, though.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I'm into it, but we're kind of at the same point that we've been, but I like that their rivalry still feels heated. So there's that, but it's not lighting my world on fire or anything. I think Becky Lynch being gone is very noticeable.
Yes, it's very noticeable. Talking smack, what happened with Luke Harper?
Well, basically what I said at the end, I mean, Luke Harper came back and he gave a promo too.
Okay, cool. That's fine. I thought I accused of something else.
No.
But yeah, overall, I think SmackDown took us away from the dross that was... I mean, it wasn't dross. It was fine. I think the card placement for No Mercy actually really hurt it.
Yeah.
And I don't think... a lot of times card placement doesn't really matter, but I think, you know, it was very, very jarring, the order they put the matches.
I think it really hurt the show. And, I mean, I think there was nobody who... As much as they were promoting it throughout the show, right, they kept doing vignettes about Orton and Wyatt, like, was anyone really looking forward to Bray Wyatt versus Randy Orton? Like, really?
Yeah, you always remember the beginning, you remember the end. Like, you...
Or if something stands out, you remember that. Dolph Ziggler, The Miz.
Exactly. But there you go, ladies and gentlemen. That was No Mercy and SmackDown. In the books. We'll be back next...
Did we miss Alexa Bliss's promo about how she wasn't prepared to fight Naomi and she was... prepared for Bliss.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, just it was more women's stuff that set up the match with Naomi next week, which I'm not that excited about, but I like that Alexa was still being smarmy and self-important, I guess.
Yeah, it was what it was. Next week, James Ellsworth gets his shot at the WWE World Heavyweight Championship against AJ Styles. That should be absolutely glorious. That's it, folks. Sandra and I will be back tomorrow with the Retro Raw Rundown for October 14th, 1996, where it's 6 days until Buried Alive, the last time that we will see The Undertaker and Mankind before their lives are changed forever. And we'll see Savio Vega, Sandra's favourite, battle Steve Austin in a grudge match for the ages. Sandra, are you excited?
I'm pretty excited. Not so much about Savio Vega, but...
Who is?
You know, I mean, he's Savio Vega. He carries a strap.
He does. There you go. So, Sandra, where can people find you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. And follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes.
Thank you very much, everyone. And if you're bored this weekend, then why not just watch some random Kane shit? Because there's plenty to choose from.
Some of it's really good.
Yeah, I kind of love him.
Yeah.
Oh. You should do a tour with Kane one day.
You should do a tour with Kane.
Wonder if he'd wear the mask. Anyway, bye!